It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Let's start with the moon, which I spent a lot of time looking at on Monday along with millions and millions of other people. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee was talking to a group of students, and she said, a full moon is that completely rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is, why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat, but it's almost impossible to go near the sun. The moon is much more manageable. And NASA's going back to the moon. I don't know about you. I want to be first in line to know how to live and be able to survive on the moon. That's another planet which we're going to see shortly. Okay, so the moon is not a planet. It's not made up of gases. I don't know where she was getting this. And after being, lectured on astronomy, the congresswoman came out and said, obviously I misspoke and meant to say the sun. But as usual, Republicans are focused on stupid things instead of stuff that really matters. What can I say, though? Foolish thinkers lust for stupidity. Okay, the only problem is, if she had said the sun instead of the moon, it still makes no sense. Gases, living there, planet. All right. You know, I'm still upset. I think about this every day. The aid workers, the 7 aid workers from Jose Andres' World Central Kitchen, who were killed in a grave, grave mistake by Israeli airstrikes. Well, Chris Wallace, my former colleague now at CNN, said on the air the other day, and he takes this very personally because he knows Jose Andres, and his daughter, Chris's daughter, had volunteered with the group to feed Ukrainian refugees. He went on to say, we've witnessed the deaths of tens of thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, IDF striking back at Hamas after its savage attack. The deaths of 7 aid workers are no more tragic than the deaths of thousands of innocent Palestinian women, men, and children. But for me, this is personal. I've known Jose for years. World-famous chef, he made it his mission to feed people in need as an act of love. 2 years ago, my daughter Catherine volunteered at World Central Kitchen. He showed a picture. And that man in the center, named Sobel, who Catherine says was incredibly kind. He is one of the 7 World Central Kitchen people who was killed this week. Now, I'm no military expert, and I know Hamas is hiding in a civilian population, but there's got to be some way Israel can fight this war without killing so many innocents, without killing people like Damien. And, you know, when you know someone or your daughter knows somebody, it certainly brings it home. Sometime over these 6 months, continuing to fight this war this way became unacceptable. Yesterday on MSNBC, Ari Melber, who's a lawyer and whose show I generally respect, had a long jailhouse interview with Michael Avenatti. Now, you remember Michael Avenatti. He represented Stormy Daniels. He later was convicted of stealing money from Stormy Daniels, defrauding Nike, and other offenses. And yet, on the theory that because at the time, this is all obviously a lead up to the hush money case, at the time, Avenatti was representing Stormy Daniels and dealing with Michael Cohen, who will be a star witness and certainly a witness whose credibility will be challenged. Melber thought, hey, this would be an interesting interview. His next guest was former prosecutor Nick Ackerman. And Ackerman said, I wouldn't take his word on anything. He knows nothing about this case. He was not involved in the mechanics of the case. He was not involved in the payoffs. He was not involved in how it was set up. He's not a witness in this case. The witnesses in this case are, it's not just Michael Cohen. It's also David Pecker, who is the head of the National Enquirer. And Melber came back and said, well, you don't know who. He could be a witness. I'll leave it up to you. Story number one is again about abortion. And let me just premise this by saying this. It seems to me that obviously abortion is an issue that people on both sides feel very strongly about. It's a moral issue. It's, if you are pro-life, it's the killing of the unborn. If you are pro-choice, it's the woman's right to have autonomy over her body. And obviously, since Donald Trump on Monday released that video saying he wasn't going to take a stand on any time frame, even though with me and others he talked about a ban, a national ban after 16 weeks or 15 weeks, the people should just decide, the will of the people. Well, yesterday, Arizona's Supreme Court brought back, revived a near total ban, an almost complete and total ban on abortion. And here is what has people so upset about it. This is invoking an 1864 law. In other words, the Civil War was still going on. And this law was adopted while Arizona was still a territory. Arizona wouldn't become a state for about another 50 years. And there was all kinds of primitive things that we would find unacceptable today. Age of consent, age of sexual consent, 10 years old. And this 1864 territorial law said anything to induce a miscarriage, unless it was to save the mother's life, was illegal, and the providers would get prison time. This was a 4-2 ruling. And it can't be enforced for 14 days. Planned Parenthood, Arizona, couldn't raise constitutionality questions before a lower court in that time. So we'll see what happens. But this is completely upended politics in Arizona and nationally. So if this ruling were to stand, Arizona's abortion clinics would have to either ramp down or shutter. And actually, after the Supreme Court struck down Roe, 8 of the 9 clinics in Arizona, well, temporarily closed 2 years ago. So campaigners in Arizona have already gathered enough, more than enough signatures to put on the ballot a referendum to legalize abortion. So it's going to be a huge battleground, and it's a big presidential swing state. Doctors across the country complaining about it's hard to know what's legal and what's not legal in this scattered post-Roe landscape. So the head of SBA Pro-Life America called this Arizona decision an enormous victory. So a former Republican attorney general in Arizona asked the highest court to restore this 160-year-old ban. I mean, it never went away. It just had sort of faded from use. Chief medical officer for Planned Parenthood in Arizona said she was seeing patients at a clinic in Tempe when the ruling sparked an atmosphere of chaos. Now, let's get a lot of reaction here. Here's Dan Bowles of the Washington Post. It took a little more than a day for Donald Trump's political gambit on abortion to come undone. Why does he say this? Trump said, let states handle the issue. The Arizona court showed the full implications of that state's rights strategy. The Biden-Harris campaign and other Democrats pounced on the ruling. Let me just take a quick pause here. How did the President of the United States pounce on the ruling? He put out a statement. He didn't go before the cameras and say this is terrible. He put out a statement. Vice President Kamala Harris will be in Arizona on Friday. I said, well, that's pretty quick. They get her to go out there and rail against this, but the trip had already been planned. So this is just not a very nimble campaign. You know, I think it even goes beyond the president's, you know, distaste for talking to journalists or feeling that if he goes on camera, he may flub something. The thing about taping a video is you can do it 12 times till you get it right. You can do a short one. As recently as this morning, I'm still seeing Donald Trump's video saying the state should be able to decide, replayed, and maybe there's a reference to something Biden said or not. It just continues to boggle my mind that he just does not use this bully pulpit. Now, the Bowles piece, and he is, you know, the dean of the Washington Political Press Corps. All abortion politics are national, not local. Abortion developments are no longer confined to the geography where they take place. Instantly part of the larger debate. Politically, Republicans have paid a high price time after time in red states and blue states alike, in both votes to install abortion rights into state constitutions and political campaigns waged around the issue of freedom of choice. Democrats have consistently won, often by significant margins. And a number of states are trying to put these referenda on state ballots. There is no safe harbor for Trump and the Republicans at this point. Then let's flip to moderate conservative Ross Douthat at the New York Times. And he sort of agrees with Bowles, but comes at it in a slightly different way. The problem for pro-lifers is that these efforts at persuasion have become markedly less effective over a timeline that overlaps closely with Trump's takeover of the Republican Party. Douthat, not a Trump fan. The captivity of abortion opponents in this sense isn't about the specific policy stances that Trump might choose and that they might have to reluctantly accept. It's about the ways in which a Trumpist form of conservatism seems inherently to make Americans more pro-choice. Interesting. For most of my lifetime, he writes, public opinion on abortion was fairly stable, leaning pro-choice but with a strong pro-life minority and a lot of people in the middle, expressing support for some restrictions, not others. By the mid-2010s, there has been a clear shift in favor of abortion rights. More Americans support abortion without restriction than at any point since Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973. But the shift seems to accelerate around 2016. You know what happened that year. Americans had already become more liberal on issues like same-sex marriage, thanks to the John Roberts Supreme Court legalizing it and people going along and realizing this was not the apocalypse. The identification of the anti-abortion cause with Trump's particular persona, his personal history and public style, might have persuaded previously wavering and ambivalent Americans to see the pro-life movement differently. If you set out to champion the rights of the most vulnerable human beings while promising protection and support for women in their most vulnerable state, and your leader is a man famous for his playboy lifestyle, people are going to have legitimate questions about whether they can trust you to make good on your promises of love and care. And here's liberal Washington Post columnist Ruth Marcus writing before the Arizona court ruling, talking about Trump's stance. Leaving the decision to individual states is the best we can expect, under these terrible circumstances. Except that Trump's new pain to the states' rights is utter hogwash. First look at his record. The man's been all over the lot. He proclaimed himself very pro-choice back in 1999. And in 2016, he says there has to be some form of punishment for women who have abortions. This was in a television interview. Look at his words. He told us straight out that his new commitment to states' rights is driven by politics. We should believe him. Well, he didn't quite put it that way. Great love and compassion must be shown when even thinking about the subject of life. But at the same time, we must use common sense in realizing that we have an obligation to the salvation of our nation, which is currently in serious decline, to win elections. This is about politics, pure and simple. Okay, you know, you also could argue that Joe Biden, a devout Catholic, who didn't like much to talk about abortion publicly, is also being political. I'm not doubting that he comes down on the side of a woman's right to choose. What he believes as a Catholic may just simply conflict with his view of the role of government. But he also recognizes that this is a potentially transformative issue for Democrats in this election in which he is running and polling badly. And then you get to the Comstock Act. This is an 1873 law. So a few years after the end of the Civil War, making it a felony to mail any article or thing designed, adapted, or intended for producing abortion. And would the FDA in a second Trump term restrict or eliminate access to the abortion drug, mifepristone? I think, at least in the case that's before the court right now, the oral arguments made clear that the Supreme Court would not. The Comstock Act is the anti-abortion advocate's trump card. I don't think she intended a pun. This antiquated law was a dead letter during the half century that Roe was in place. After the Supreme Court's Dobbs ruling, the Biden Justice Department said it interpreted the Comstock Act to cover only illegal abortions. Okay. Now for more on the impact in Arizona. Here's the Daily Beast. Carrie Lake, who was strongly pro-life in her campaign 2 years ago for governor, which she lost and contested. She is now running against Democrat Ruben Gallego for the Senate, with Kyrsten Sinema bowing out. This 1864 ban, getting this, is the territorial ban, at a time when Arizona was decades away from being a state. She previously called it a great law. She said last year, she trusts the people of Arizona to vote on this, and if that's what happens, to get this right. Still supporting the 1864 territorial ban. Okay, move to now. Now she says, I am the only woman and mother in this race. I wholeheartedly agree with President Trump. This is a very personal issue that should be determined by each individual state and her people. She said she no longer supports the territorial law. Trust the people of Arizona to get it right. Gallego called the decision devastating and said people like Lake are forcing themselves into doctor's offices and ripping away the right for women to make their own healthcare decisions. So he's just decided to ignore her change of position, which is now closer to his position, although Carrie Lake still says she's not pro-choice. But since she has supported in the past, he's going to go after that. That's politics.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Story number two. This is a scoop by Politico. Ron Klain, who's worked for Joe Biden forever, who was his chief of staff in the White House for the first 2 years, openly questioned President Biden's political strategy last night, saying he's too focused on infrastructure projects. He was speaking at a forum, and Politico had access to the audio. "I think the president is out there too much talking about bridges," says Klain. "He does two or three events a week where he's cutting a ribbon on a bridge, and here's a bridge. And like I tell you, if you go in the grocery store, and you know, eggs and milk are expensive, the fact that there is an effing bridge is not," and that next word is inaudible. So he's at this forum, and he says, well, all this infrastructure being built under Biden is a positive thing. He's not a congressman. He's not running for Congress. I think it's kind of a fool's errand. I also think it doesn't get covered that much because, look, it's an effing bridge. Like, it's a bridge. And how interesting is the bridge? It's a little interesting, but it's not a lot interesting. The president's most effective economic message is contrast around whose side are you on. Compassion for the people pinched by family budgets and his agenda to bring down costs and raise incomes. And lauding achievements, especially ones with abstract benefits, is less persuasive with voters. I've made this point in many different ways. And probably the key point is it just doesn't get covered. It seems repetitive. It seems old. Same thing with student loan forgiveness. Yes, it's a great thing if you are personally don't have to pay $20,000 that you owed before. Get some younger voters on his side. But all of this, you know, it makes local headlines, obviously. You go to Kentucky or Phoenix or Kansas City and you say, there's going to be this project. But then it takes a while to build it. Now, Ron Klain could pick up the phone and call Joe Biden and tell him this directly. It may be that he already has and isn't being listened to. He's not a formal part of the campaign. Now, President Biden did do an interview, first sit-down one in a while, with Univision. This was last week. I don't know why it was just aired last night, whether that was Univision's part. And he was asked, you know, what's the greatest threat to America? And here on camera, he talked about Latino issues a lot, but on camera he said, Donald Trump, seriously. Donald Trump talks using phrases like, we're going to eviscerate the Constitution. He's going to be a dictator on day one. The idea that he would sit in the office, and I'll show you before you leave, off the Oval Office and watch for hours the attack on the Capitol and the destruction and the mayhem and the people who were killed, police officers who died and called them political heroes, called them patriots, and saying if he gets elected, he's going to free them all because they're being held illegally. Look the way he talks about minority populations or Hispanics. And then he comes back to the dictator on day one. No one doesn't believe him. Okay, dictator on day one was a kind of a joke that he made with Sean Hannity and said he would use that day to drill, baby, drill and deal with the border. But there's another piece of news that a lot of people didn't get to. Axios did. Remember that Univision is a Spanish language broadcaster. In this interview, Biden kind of sort of strongly hinted that he is going to take action on the border. Axios says, well, it's not final. Of course not. An executive order is likely by the end of April. Now, it was about a month ago that Biden teased the possibility of an executive order. Didn't do it. But, you know, he said we're examining whether or not I have that power. Some are suggesting I should just go ahead and try it. And if I get shut down by the court, I get shut down by the court. Yeah, I thought he should have done this just to show that he has the power of the presidency and can take this action. Will he in the end do it? Your guess is as good as mine. Number three, this has to do with the Stormy Daniels trial that I mentioned a little while ago, which starts Monday. Here's what Trump posted about this. And this was sort of in the same vein as when he compared himself to Nelson Mandela. And I asked his national press secretary about that. And she didn't respond directly, but she talked about how partisan the Alvin Bragg case was. The White House thugs should not be allowed to have these dangerous and unfair Biden trials during my campaign for president. It's an illegal attack on a political opponent. Communism at its worst. Election interference at its best. On Monday, I will be forced to sit, gagged, before a highly conflicted and corrupt judge whose hatred for me has no bounds. Alvin Bragg wanted to take this ridiculous case. Nobody except Alvin Bragg wanted to take this case. Excuse me. All legal scholars say it's a sham. Well, not all. Biden's DOJ is running the case. Actually, the elected Democratic District Attorney of Manhattan is running the case. I know Trump told me in our interview that a guy who had worked for justice had gone to the DA's office in New York. But that is just a career move. It doesn't mean Biden's DOJ is running the case. Also, the gag part. He can defend himself. He can even attack the judge, Judge Merchan. He can attack Alvin Bragg. What he's gagged about is talking about disparagingly any witness or family members of court staff, such as Judge Merchan's daughter or any Alvin Bragg family members. Now, I want to move on to story four. This is an interview in which Politico was included with Vladimir Zelensky. He warned in this interview that Russian influence had pierced the American political system and rejected the idea, backed by allies of Donald Trump, that Ukraine could swiftly end the war just by making massive territorial concessions. But Zelensky said, and this is yesterday, he had privately urged Trump, this is new, through intermediaries to travel to Ukraine, and that Trump had expressed interest, but had not yet committed to making a trip. Zelensky said he was open to hearing Trump's proposals for the war, while making clear he was highly skeptical. If the deal is that we just give up our territories, and that's the idea behind it, then it's a very primitive idea. This is an interview with Axel Springer, media outlets, and Politico is owned by Axel Springer. I need strong arguments, said Zelensky. I don't need a fantastic idea. I need a real idea because people's lives are at stake. But what this also shows you, and the same thing with David Cameron, the former British Prime Minister, talking to Trump, is that world leaders are having to calculate the possibility, and it's certainly a significant possibility, that next January they'll be dealing with President Trump. Trump's been a consistent skeptic of the war effort, a critic of Zelensky. I personally doubt he will go to Ukraine. His party doesn't want to give, many in his party, I should say. Mike Johnson accepted right now. Don't want to give you a further U.S. aid to Ukraine. Oh, and here's my very point later in the piece. Zelensky's textured approach to Trump represents the latest effort by a major world leader to calibrate his handling of the former American president, who's now the presumptive nominee. He is the nominee. Let's get rid of that.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
All right, number five. This is just interesting to me. Francis Ford Coppola. Facing the apocalypse. I mean, here's the guy, legendary film director of all three Godfather movies. And According to The Hollywood Reporter, he had a screening recently, and all kinds of Hollywood big shots were there. They had a Sony. Let's see, who else? Oh, it was attended by Al Pacino, of The Godfather fame and many other movie fame. And this is a project that he's pushing. He's trying to get funding for. He first began writing it in 1983. That's how long he's wanted to do this. It cost $120 million to make. And that was funded by Coppola himself. He sold part of his wine empire. I didn't know he had a wine empire. It's over 2 hours. It follows the rebuilding of a metropolis after its accidental destruction, with two different visions. One from an idealist architect, played by Adam Driver. The other from its pragmatist mayor, Giancarlo Esposito. There are references to Rome and Caesar haircuts. Anyway, Coppola is now 84 years old, and he wanted to announce a distribution plan for this movie. And it was going to premiere at Cannes. But even though, you know, there was somebody there from Disney and somebody there from Warner Brothers, nobody bit. One distributor quoted as saying, there's just no way to position this movie. Everyone is rooting for Francis, someone else said, and feels nostalgic. But then there is the business side of things. Everybody apparently was silent at the end of the movie. Now, a smaller label could pick it up, but they wouldn't have the budget. I'm sure Coppola wants to get some of his money back. And so he also filmed it so it could be played at IMAX theaters. Sounds interesting. Well, when you lay out $120 million of your own money, that's a lot of grapes. You're taking a big risk. And at this point in his career, the legendary Coppola seems for the moment to be stymied. Hey, thanks for being along for the ride. Try to cover a wide variety of things here. Always enjoy my time with you. We'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.